Jaspreet Boparai and Don Nicholson with Greenwashed on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
Welcome back. You're with Greenwash. And if you're just joining us this morning, earlier today, we spoke with Toby Williams, chairperson of the Federated Farmers Meat and Wool Industry Group, discussing this new report that came out, painting a dystopian future for rural communities called Why Pines?
Why pines, indeed. I don't think we'll be pining for pines very soon. There'll be that many of them around. But isn't it interesting, Jaspreet? That was all about meeting our fresh water standards.
Any excuse will do, Don.
Rather than climate change, they've changed the excuse. So they've moved it to freshwater standards. That was set in place by the last government. Now, they're going to have those standards reviewed. Clearly, there is something radically wrong because it's causing problems in every regional council around this country, how we meet these freshwater standards that appear to be not in sync with common sense, really. I'm being a bit blasé on it, but there's something not right here. And so let's hope. We can only hope for common sense.
Yeah, we just seem to want nirvana on everything, the green nirvana, climate nirvana, water nirvana. I don't know what we can afford between our needs and wants. There's a huge gap there.
Oh, absolutely. There's a huge gap. And of course, they've got all the sunk investment that's in the meat and wool sector and the processing sector for beef. That investment is at massive risk every time these sorts of ideals are put in front of the country and say, yes, we must do that. Well, you're actually destroying the other industry that's had massive investment in behind it. And it's disappointing. I mean, as I said in that interview, we've resurrected the meat industry, processing sector, so many times. Let's get to the bigger crazies.
Well, this doesn't get any bigger than the granddaddy of them all, Antonio Guterres, the United Nations Secretary General.
He didn't make much of a splash, did he, when he came to New Zealand? It was just a whimper in the media about him.
Yeah, so in case you missed it, like most of us might have, there was this one story in One News that UN Chief disagrees with New Zealand's plan to reverse the fossil fuel ban. So Antonio Guterres stopped by en route to Tonga for the Pacific Islands Forum leaders meeting. And he is not happy. He is not happy that both Christopher Luxon and Winston Peters have championed the reversal of a 2018 ban on offshore oil and gas imposed by dear leader previously, Jacinda Ardern.
Yeah, he's not. And the thing he wrote a line, or he was quoted here as saying, the only thing I can tell you is that the oil and gas that will be discovered from now, I'm absolutely sure it will never be used. Well, that's a big statement based on where we're sitting with our energy security right now. Good luck with that, I would say, dear Secretary General.
Who does he think he is, Don? Whoever elected this man?
Well, he's the messiah for the climate crazies. So he's like your old mate, one of your old mates. What was it?
Pachauri.
All those sort of people.
I mean, IPCC head.
They've got, I don't know how they get to these positions. Obviously, they weasel their way through the morass of the United Nations, and you get to this position because, we've had several United Nations Secretary Generals, and we generally lauded them. And you look back over time and you realize that was probably a big mistake for those of us that take an interest. And, Guterres has been there long enough now to have, had his impact, and his name is common in the scheme of things. But, he's got a sort of one trick up his sleeve, and it's this global boiling and all this sort of mantra. He's wearisome. He comes from Portugal. No disrespect to Portugal, but you can have him back.
You can have him back. He's been there for a while. I think he's into his second or third term. I'm not sure which. And speaking of Guterres, when did the United Nations last have a female Secretary General? I can't think. Think of Ban Ki-moon and everyone that comes into my mind is a
diversity, equity, inclusion. Not
is it Jacinda Ardern next?
Oh, Now you're flying a kite. My goodness. That you Who heard knows? It first on Reality Check Radio Greenwashed from Jess Breit.
Well, fabulous. You know, it's a, what's fair is fair.
Yeah, look, and of course he's going on to go to this conference later in the week, and in fact, it's probably just concluded. It's this week, isn't it?
It is this coming week.
Yeah, and he came to New Zealand, then he's going later in the week and Prime Minister Luxon will be there. And of course, he's hamming it up about the threat to Samoa and the Pacific and, you know, islands that are sinking and sea levels rising. We won't talk about the islands that are actually building mass rather than losing it, but he doesn't want to know about that. It's all about catastrophe, and it's all about unprecedented catastrophes. And, you know, sadly, I've lost my brother-in-law this week, and he's Samoan, and they had property in downtown Apia. I never heard them ever talk about sea level rise in the 40-odd years I knew my brother-in-law. So I don't know. Yeah, who do you believe?
Yeah, I was sorry to hear that, Don. And yeah, you would have thought that this would be part of the conversation.
Well, I would have thought so, because he and I used to talk about politics a lot. But anyway, you do worry about how much more we can take. I mean, I gave that submission to the select committee the other day, and you could see the body language from the left of center chap and the Greens clearly doesn't want to know what is fact from fiction. Doesn't want to know. Doesn't want, just wants to put the fear of the future into everybody, continue that fear of the future. And that's what Guterres is doing to me. He's just putting that fear of tomorrow into everyone's head. And it's a massive psychological operation, isn't it, when you analyze it?
Massive psyop, the scale of which was only at this point beaten by COVID. But we've gone from one fear to the next one. And that's what you do, don't you, to keep a population on the edge. Just constantly you're lurching from one emergency to the next, one crisis to the next. And these guys know you never let a crisis go waste. Yeah.
That's true. And there, and on top of that, the subversion tactic is to get into the minds of your children and create the anxiety that they have. And it's not going to end until we end it with fact. We're going to have to tell people there is no more of this. You cannot keep pushing this misinformation and disinformation into the minds of our young and vulnerable. And of course, you've come up with this next climate crazy. The German state media broadcaster develops a virtual
reality game.
Yes. And it looks as crazy as it can get.
Yep. So in this virtual reality game, listeners, players will be shooting lasers at flying climate denialists. It is hard to believe that this is true, but it is actually true. The German state media broadcaster, SWR, won't bother to pronounce the name, have used the mandatory license fee they collect from all citizens to produce this astounding game, which is called Green Guardians VR, or Green Guardians Virtual Reality. And it is going to be released to the public this autumn of the Northern Hemisphere, I mean. They're going to be debuting this at the Cologne Video Game Trade Show in the very near future. And it is funny, but it is deadly serious, this one. How will you ever do the propaganda that has sunk into the mind of a child for years playing this thing? How will you ever undo it? Because ultimately, all of us, we want to stick to our stance, don't we? We want to defend our corners. And a child that's been exposed to this sort of a video game is now, as far as I think, a convert. The pitch here by the narrator goes, climate, weather, disasters, to dark clouds, a dark forecast cloud your future prospects. Don't let it get you down. We are the Environment Venture Income League. We'll show you that everything will be wonderful. And so on and so forth. It is, I don't know, it's a parody, but yet it is real life for these children.
Yeah, it is a parody. But, you know, they're so isolated from reality, these people, these gamers and the people that play. I mean, I get tense about my grandson and his use of device. He's inside, doesn't get out and see the sun, and, you know, the device takes over. But I actually do have some faith that he's smart enough to realize that this is a game. But as you are worried about Jaspreet, it's a slow, by little increment by increment, it gets into their brain and it can slowly convert them. And of course, we know that's part of the way. Indoctrinate your kids.
They know it. Yep. They know it. This is how you do it. Yep. Catch them young. Everyone knew it, right? From Hitler to Lenin to the lot today, they all know it. You get the young, you've got them. Was it Lenin who said, give me a child for 4 years and I'll show you the youth that is later, or some such thing, to completely murder a famous quote. But this, the press release with this says that we realize young people from Generation Z are primarily attracted by entertaining content. Youth between the ages of 14 to 25 want something to do and involved in interact. And that's why this game, which has a fictitious oil company, transports players into the near future, and then players see through the disinformation of oil. Mm-hmm. You know, the oil that is in tens of thousands of things around you. Maybe the phone through which you're listening to Don and me right now. Maybe a computer. Maybe a jacket. Maybe gas, if most of the parts of your EV. That petrol, that fuel, oil is really bad.
Yeah, look, there's a dose of reality needed. And of course, it comes down to us as parents and grandparents to make sure we don't let this happen to our siblings and children and grandchildren. But you know, in the end, we're not here forever. And what will be the evolution of ideas, as we have often talked about, ends up either really, you know, generally I like the ideas that have made the Western world or the world flourish have been good ideas, haven't they? Theoretically, we are enjoying the best times we've ever had. And yet apparently it's not good enough because we've actually enjoyed these times and there's now too many of us, apparently. I don't fear the future at all unless there's meddlers like the political class meddling. Yeah. That we've had in recent times. So, yeah, I don't know. We're like sheep until we want to turn into lions. And at the moment, we're nowhere near being lion enough.
Yep. We are not really being lion enough. Mm. Well, from those dissing fossil fuel like this German virtual reality game to Antonio Guterres to someone who loves fossil fuel and will be using it to power a private jet to nip 1,000 miles, that's 1,600 kilometers between California and Seattle. Who's that, you might ask? That is the Starbucks new boss, who will be using this to commute, a private jet to commute 2 to 3 times a week, depending, you know, on his schedule. Meanwhile, there is a stuff as fleeps. Please do not forget your paper straw. While Brand Nicole, the brand new boss of Starbucks, uses a jet on a weekly basis. Couple of times.
Yeah. And yeah, hypocrisy knows no bounds. I mean, with that surname of his, Nicole, N-I-C-C-O-L, I think there's some similarity to my surname. So he's probably very distantly related, but he's obviously on a different pay grade to me. But crazy stuff, isn't it? I mean, he knew the rules, but he's been outed. We'll be interested to see how he defends his position.
But maybe, John, maybe he might just be, you know, buying some carbon offset somewhere to, of course, underwrite all of his polluting emissions, just like happening in the UK. Now, an arable farm in UK, this was the headline from Farming News UK. It says, arable farm now selling carbon credits to top Formula One team. So this is the Blaston farm in UK, which has been at the forefront of regenerative farming, and it has worked with experts at a rural consultancy to help turn the farm into one that sequesters and stores a surplus of carbon. I thought that's what all of our farms did, Don. But good on this guy. He's monetizing it.
Yes, and you actually can't blame him. The opportunity he's been given. Mercedes-AMG Petronas F1 team is buying their credits out of there, and they're very happy about it. But there is a salutary warning toward the end of the article. It sort of says the longevity of these practices is somewhat unknown. This is the regen agriculture. Yeah. We know that soil cannot store infinite amounts of carbon, so it is uncertain exactly how long we can continue to increase soil organic matter. I almost said oil organic matter. But farmers who are already trying regen ag ought to think about having their soil carbon levels measured against their emissions to generate credits. The market is only growing and the companies are increasingly looking for ways to offset their emissions. It could be a great way to make extra money when farms are under pressure. Well, let's just stop farming and we'll have credits galore. But there is a warning towards the end. I'm trying to find it. And it did basically say, and I can't find it. It said, this may not work every year. There could be years because of the climate and the environment that you're farming in that you actually don't have a credit, a surplus of credit. So it's a warning.
It is telling the British farmers and farmers everywhere, stop farming. That might just pay you more.
Yeah. Yeah,
and well, think of all of these climate, these emissions-based gravy trains. Hitch your wagon onto one of those stars and away you go. And who cares what comes in the future?
Well, it's a bit like the pine tree farm in New Zealand, the expansion of pines. I mean, that is being touted as far more profitable than farming sheep and beef. Hence why there's investors saying, yeah, we'll plant pines. Yeah.
Be it one excuse or another, listeners, there's a war on ag. There's a war on the primary sector. There's a war on your very way of life. It's not just a primary sector. It's the urban as well. Because if you're looking at your power bill, if you're looking at your grocery bill, our struggles translate into your struggles. Whatever is happening to us, no one is isolated from it. And of course, there is shops and cafes and businesses closing down. I don't know about others, but I typically buy clothes one season ahead for my children. They are young and they really, you know, they shoot up. Mm. And the sales on children's clothes already on merinos and others, because that's all I stock up ahead for them, are pretty massive this year. And I'm just seeing it's what is happening. Are people actually able to make any money, retailers?
Oh, I think it's the squeeze is massive that's going on right now. It doesn't matter what field you're in, really, Jasprit. New Zealand is in a hell of a bind, in my opinion. The surplus cash that mums and dads have is, I would suggest, close to zero, probably negative. And local authorities and government policies have not helped. And we can keep talking about the past 6 or 8 years. And that's where the damage started. You have to say 2017 to 2023 wasn't good, and we flushed the country full of borrowed cash, and now the chickens are coming home to roost. And I want to go back to that story from the British farm. There's a regen network platform that lists the credits on a site called I assume the analysis is done by Ecometrics. All that is an added cost to the consumer in the end. All these things will flow on through. And in this case, it will flow on through to the cost of going to a Formula One meeting or whatever. There'll be lots of things that it'll flow through to. But this is only, if this is what
this
they're
is the
doing, it's just, if this is the future, it doesn't fix anything about making life more affordable for the mums and dads at all.
Couldn't agree more. I have not a single word to add there, Don.
So there's so many crazies that we've got onto. What do you think we should do next?
I think when I was talking about the war on farming and this UK region story, selling your credits to the F1 team, there's another one on farming UK that says, this came out on the 17th of August, saying new auditing requirements to cost growers an extra £60 million a year. This is which growers? This is specifically the £60 million a year to the UK berry industry. So they have proposed some controversial changes, of course, which are very well camouflaged under this guise of audit regime called CEDEX, which stands for Supplier Ethical Data Exchange. So I don't know who it is ethical for, but it's going to force growers to pay for the recruitment and transportation fees of seasonal workers they employ in a so-called employer-based principle. British berry growers are saying this is unsustainable and it would wipe out the berry sector in a stroke. And that body that's declaring this, it represents 95% of the British berry growers, and £60 million a year. If you think, so anyone who is going for this, pushing for this, they need to realize that a punnet at Wimbledon is going to cost a whole lot more. That's even if you can afford to go to Wimbledon, or even just want a punnet of something in your kids' lunchboxes. But, you know, under the guise of ethical audit, anything goes.
Yeah, and I can't find in that article the total berry market in the United Kingdom, but 60 million pounds is a scandal. It's no different, really. And bear with me here. Remember that I came up with about a month ago that the 600,000 hectares of ETS forestry in New Zealand, and the previous government was collecting $30 a hectare off those to do them, basically the audit, as you would, well, that's what I assume it's for, of those 600,000 hectares. That was $18 million fed straight into the government coffers. For what? And you'd have to wonder what this supplier ethical data exchange could do.
What it's meant to do, wipe out another industry.
Mm. So, look, we let these things get out of the box at our peril. Who was the bright idea behind it? That's what I mean, clearly there's some very bright people in behind all these sort of schemes, and the dreams that obviously lead to these schemes are set up by who? The opportunity is given through legislation, and all these people just seem to, they must go home at night and say, how can I milk the legislation and make a life?
Look, I gave an example early last year when Don and I just began the show 18 months ago, and I still remember the feedback that I got. So I was speaking that time about the fact that as contract milkers, my husband and I, there is this market median wage that we need to pay for anyone who's an overseas visa. That market median wage on 1st of February this year went up to $32.10 an hour. So it's almost $10 increase from the other, you know, the New Zealand median minimum wage that needs to be paid to someone on an overseas work visa. And the feedback that came back, this was last year, March, I remember, was Jaspreet and her husband are slave drivers and they don't want to pay fair wages to anyone. They didn't get it. Person did not get it. When you suddenly, everything is for the employee rather than the employer, like in this case, what's happening in the UK, there is going to be fallouts of that. And those fallouts, the ripple of those fallouts reach everyone. I still stick to my this thing. I do not see why someone from overseas who's you know, new to the place should be getting $10 more an hour than a Kiwi. But that's what the previous government did. The new government has not undone that legislation yet. And that continues.
They were saying that a rising tide lifts all boats. And of course, that was a way to get the New Zealand wage up regardless. You know, because you were never going to have a Kiwi worker working for less than a new migrant worker.
Absolutely.
And that's what it did. It caused, and of course, you know, in the dairy industry, there was a serious shortfall in cash flow in the recent years. And, you know, it's put a lot of dairy farmers under massive pressure. But that's what governments do. Meddle, meddle, meddle. And there's always an effect of their meddling.
So I even blamed the feds because they were like, they were gushing about how much the salaries are rising. But then this was last year. And then this year there came this report from the feds that has higher migrant wage requirement will pinch Kiwis at the Sumba market. Well, I jolly well told you so. When I came in 2009, the minimum wage was $13.25. It is now $32 nearly for anyone. The milk price never went up that much. Someone's getting screwed.
Yeah, well, I think it was Larry Margrain that said that to have equivalence with the milk price of about that period, we'd now be having to get sort of close to $12 kilogram.
I was thinking closer to $15. I was too.
I thought he was understating it based on the inflation. It's interesting. One other little fact. I know we're running out of time for the segment, but I listened to Gina Rinehart give an address to the Australian media last week through, I think it's a series that they're running around Australia. They were in Townsville and there was a clip that was played. And I'm sure in that somewhere, and I need to go back to it, but there was a talk about 1 million new migrants to Australia, but only 40,000 jobs were what they took up. And in fact, they seem to take the jobs from the existing people, very similar to the story you're just saying. And so million came in, but really there was no new jobs effectively. They just displaced the jobs of 40,000 Australians. And if I've got that right, that just shows you how the balance is way, way wrong when we allow a migration into our sovereign nations that is almost unfettered. It creates the problems. It distorts what we actually were building to. And it's messed with it. It's messed with it, Jaspreet.
And more than that, Don, I have spoken about it, and this is probably not the point of the show to talk, but I'll still mention, we are not just encouraging migration. We are also aiding by means of all these programs run by the Ministry of Ethnic Communities to ensure that the migrants remain in their own enclaves and they do not integrate. What that leads to, I have seen it in India. I've seen, you know, I sound like a stuck record even to my own self. It doesn't lead to good outcomes for society as a whole. We become very territorial. We become very tribal. And for any government, the ultimate nightmare would be a united people. And this sort of thing helps keep us divided.
Yeah, it does. It does. It's wearisome having to bring this stuff up all the time. But it's, as we said, if you don't keep repeating it, people will never. If we convert one person at a time to listen to us and try and open their mind. I'm not saying we have it all right, but have their minds open, then we're doing our job, I think, Jaspreet. Hey, yeah. There's one other we should get onto before we run out, and it's the Met Office records hottest day of the year at a weather station in the UK. Well, we've had a similar story to this before, but this was August the 20th. It says that the Met Office declared the hottest day of the year so far in the UK, with a temperature reaching 34.8 degrees in Cambridge. The Met Office claimed it was only 11th time since 1961 that the temperature had reached that level, with six of these occasions having been recorded in the last 10 years. Needless to say, missing from the account was a note that the station in Cambridge's National Institute for Agricultural Botany is located just metres from a massive heat generating electricity substation complex.
That would have no impact on. Come on, get off.
No impact at all. And of course, a few months ago, we talked about this, how most, in fact, I think from memory, 78% of the weather stations in the UK are corrupted by something else like that. And there's lots of them, hundreds of weather stations.
Like an airport but a motorway running very close and all of that.
Yes, so 78% of them were likely to be creating deceptive
readings
outputs. And I think that came from Paul Homewood's blog. And there it is. I've got the link now. It's was on the Daily Skeptic, and it said that up to a third of UK Met Office temperature stations may be wrong by up to 5 degrees centigrade. And then it went on to talk about how nearly 8 out of 10 stations were producing junk or near junk readings. I rest my case. I think there's so many people who have just, they've sort of had their brains fried. They've been flying too close to the sun, I think.
Adult, yep.
Yeah.
I sometimes I'm at a loss for words. We have allowed this to happen, and there's still so many who would rather just go along than make a noise about this, because it's more comfortable to not rock the boat, isn't it? Especially, is that something that's inbuilt in the Kiwi nature, Don? You know, should be all right.
I think it is. Life's been, as we talked about, too comfortable. I know it's not comfortable for so many people. It's not. But for the people, the ruling class, life's comfortable and they don't actually care. They pretend they care. They actually don't. They're all fatting themselves while effectively there's people suffering from their oppressive, silly policies. I mean, you imagine if you took all the climate change policies out of New Zealand's, and I'm not saying everything's bad, we do need to adapt to changing environment. You took all that out, what would it alter our tax? What would we be able to have reduced taxes in this country? I think so. Local government rates, reduce them. I wouldn't have to give submissions to parliamentary select committees. I wouldn't have to give submissions to the local council. My life would be so much simpler as well.
Likewise, John, I could go back to just milking cows. Nothing else. None of this would be needed. But, you know, there are some who prefer diversity, equity, inclusion above everything else. And whether it bankrupts a small business owner, They don't really care.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, so I think we've got, you've always come up with a list that's a mile long, Jaspreet, and we've only just touched it, the sides of it today. So we're going to have to call the old climate crazies to a halt. But yeah, there's plenty more out there. Just go looking. And even if you've got some that you think we might have missed, send them in.
Absolutely.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.